Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule. Just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for people to download and listen to. Joining me today is Juliana. Say hello, Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
And we are going to be talking about the book called Blindsight by Peter Watts. And just to get the information out the end, genre, science fiction, publisher, Tor Books, publication date, October 2006. So what's that, 384 pages, which I'm guessing if it was an audiobook, that's about 10 hours or something like that. I didn't listen to it as an audiobook. And and it's followed by Echopraxia, which is a follow-up book which came out in 2014, which I read and reviewed back in 2014. And I said at the time to Juliana, I said, hey, I really enjoyed this book. Echopraxia is really good fun. Also, Blindsight is really good fun. You should read Blindsight. So you got the ebook for Blindsight, isn't that right at that time?
Right, I got the ebook from Peter Watts' website.
Yeah.
In English, yeah. Of course. And I start reading it in like September. September 2014, I started reading it. And I got about 60% in.
Yeah, I remember you saying, oh, I'm not going to finish it. And I thought you'd got like 20% in and then given up.
I thought so too.
You hadn't really realised how far in you were. And at that time, after reading Echopraxia, because I thought you were reading it and that we would review it together, I actually read the book again then in September 2014. But I never reviewed it because I was waiting for you to finish the book and then you didn't. And then it was too long for me. It was one of the times when I was like, okay, Luke shouldn't start reading the book until Juliana is on like the last two chapters or something, and then I can catch up with you, especially if you're reading in English. And this was one of the books which it didn't happen. You never got to the end.
I never got to the end of the English book.
Okay,
but then
let's fast forward to 2017, and I saw on Peter Watts. He's not on Facebook or Twitter or anywhere like that, but he does have a blog, and I read his blog. And he said on his blog, hey, I'm going to Poland, and I'm going to this festival in Poland. And I was like, oh, okay, I should keep an eye out for that, because, you know, if I'm passing through Poland or if he's nearby or whatever like that. And then I saw again, oh, he says, I'm passing through
Berlin.
So I sent him an email and saying, great, we're going to be in Berlin. It would be good to meet you. And Caitlin.
Caitlin Sweet. His wife.
Whose books I've also reviewed. And me and Peter Watts, of course, we've never met before, but we've emailed backwards and forwards a few times on various subjects and different books and stuff like that.
So
he's a very friendly guy.
He came to a book reading and
reading session
in a bookshop in Berlin.
And we met up with him, and it was good, and it was fun to meet him and to just hang out at the book signing and chat a bit. They did some readings, some questions and answers, which was actually really good fun, because I'm never really sure, like, oh, book reading, how interesting is going to be? And the book reading was good, because it kind of, like, when you then do a question and answer session, it like sets everyone up in the same, like, we've all got something to ask questions about. Like, of course, everyone there probably read some of Peter Watts's books. Probably Peter, you know, everyone there like had books for him to sign or buying books for him to sign. But I'm not sure that many people had read Caitlin Sweet's books. And I'd listened to one of them as audiobook. And actually, we talked about that at the time.
What is it?
The Pattern Scars. Yeah, Pattern Scars. And I said, when she did a reading, she had a really good voice. I was like,
very nice. I actually enjoyed, to be honest, her part of the reading a bit more.
Yeah, because the things that she was reading was a little bit more, like, set. You know, sort of, like, she'd obviously done it a lot before. She's got a really good reading voice.
Yeah.
I actually asked her, could you record an audiobook? Because one of the reasons I read her first book is that it was an Audible Frontiers reading, or whatever the Audible thing was, and she got contact with that, with a publisher, or however it worked out. But then her next two books were never made into audio, and I was just thinking, you know, I always just kept an eye out on, every 6 months or so when I was like, oh, what should I read again? I just type into Audible, you know, Caitlin Sweet, see if her other books have come out on Audible, and they never had, so I never got around to reading her other books.
Yeah.
Not because I didn't enjoy her writing, I really did, I thought that first book was really great. I never got around to reading it. And now I'm thinking, well, if they're not going to come out as an audiobook, maybe I'll just get around to reading them anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, all this comes down to the fact that when we were there talking to Peter Watts, and, you know, I took a photo with him and chatting to him afterwards, and saying, like, and I said, oh yeah, Juliana tried reading one of your books, but it was a bit too much for her to read in English being a second language, we've had this a few times before when you've started a book and you're like, kind of need the German version of this to really get into
it. Yeah, totally. And by accident, or however it went, it is a science fiction bookshop that they have used books and new books.
Yes.
And it happened that they had one of the out of print German paperback.
Yeah, Blindsight is out of print now in German
translation. Yeah. It is out of print. Later on, I actually found out that they did make an ebook version of it, and I could have just got the ebook version. But now I just worked my way through the paper book.
How are you enjoying reading on paper again?
It's different. Yeah. You can't read outside when it gets dark too long. Otherwise, like you can have to on put your iPad. Light on. Yeah. And
And yesterday, or a few days ago, you were reading it in bed and my lamp was on, but your lamp was off and you were sitting there like cranking the book over, trying to read the pages. I was like, why didn't you put your light on? And you're like, oh, I hadn't thought, because you're not used to having to have light for external lights now that everything we read is ebooks and is on the iPad.
Yes.
Anyway, so that was all to say.
Also, because it is a paper book, Peter Woods was able to just sign it for me.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
So
you're going to read out the dedication.
For Juliana, who tried to make me feel better. Peter Woods, 3rd of May 2017.
What's that?
Better luck next time.
And this is next time. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about this book. I've already reviewed this book back on episode... Let me quickly have a look here. Back on episode... La, 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 la. Back on episode 4. No, back on episode 80, I reviewed Blindsight. And I've also reviewed Starfish and Maelstrom and Behemoth and Echopraxia by Peter Watts. And all of them are like four and a half stars. So, it's sort of like a decent, like, solid level of writing on topics that I enjoy. And also, I know this is a weird thing to say, I also really enjoy an author who doesn't back down from really... I wouldn't say bad subjects, but like if a subject is leading to somewhere that is bad in the story, he doesn't go, oh no, they've all got to have a happy end afterwards, or all this kind of stuff. And there's the great quote, I even think it says so it always says in the blurb about Peter Watts. Who is Peter Watts? And there's one quote, I can't remember who it's by, it says, if I ever feel my will to live growing too strong, I read Peter Watts. And it's really, and I really like that when you read a book, but the thing is, it's kind of like grim worldview by the protagonist, or, the ideas in the book are kind of like, oh, wow, this is heavy stuff. But it never feels heavy because it's actually quite fast paced and it's light writing about the end of the world, or light writing about how flawed humans are as beings and all this other stuff, how your whole world is actually a lie, but it's actually a fun stuff. But it's not fun because people are dying and it's really grim, but it's like, I don't know how he does it. Like, there's this lightness to his writing which isn't bogged down in the dark and grimness, even though his stories can be like super dark and super grim and really horrific. But somehow the writing is vibrant in a way.
I totally agree on that. I disagree on other things.
What?
I agree on the writing.
Yeah.
I disagree that it is sometimes super heavy-handed with super much info dumps on psychology. Biology.
Lots of evolutionary biology
all
stuff.
All this kind of like, what am I? What is my will? Do I have a will?
A free will.
Who does?
Yeah. Again, we're getting into like what the book is about here. But all I'm saying is, like, I think even though there is info dumping, I think he has an art of info dumping, which is different from most authors who do info dumping. Like,
it has a connection to the book in that point. It is not like, okay, now I'm just going to explain how that person looks or how...
No, we never know what anybody looks like.
No. And you know what? When you first told me about reading this book and you told me, oh, then there's pirates and there's vampires and stuff.
I didn't say pirates.
Whatever. For some reasons, when you talked to me about this book, I had in my head that they were out in space, you know, with like a sailing boat. I don't know why I had this idea. It is basically impossible.
I don't know how you understood pirates. I would never have said pirates about this book. Like, there's nothing in there. There are no pirates in
this book. I know, but for some reason I had pirates in my head.
Oh, maybe in Echopraxia there's some pirating stuff going on.
I think maybe when you talked about Echopraxia, you told me about pirates and vampires and space, and I for some reason had in my head like a sailing boat, you know, like one of these ancient, bit like in steampunk kind of things, which is of course absolutely not true.
Yeah,
there's nothing like that, but there were, but there's actually just one one vampire in there. What are you looking up?
Well, I like these ideas where he said, when, like I say, with the info dumping, for example, he goes, imagine you are a machine. Yes, I know, but imagine you are a different kind of machine, one built from metal and plastic and designed not by blind, haphazard natural selection, but by engineers and astrophysicists with their eyes fixed firmly on specific goals. Imagine that your purpose is not to replicate or even to survive, but to gather information. Now, this is like right at the start of the book. This is like in my ebook page. It's disappeared. I shouldn't turn it sideways. Page 40. Of 411 or something like that. So straight away, it's sort of like, it's not saying the ship was this. It's not. It's like so direct voice from the author's voice is directly saying this. Now we are at this point of the story. Imagine this. Imagine you are this.
And he does that several times.
Yeah.
He does it also with the characters. Imagine you are Amanda Bates and this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Imagine you are this person. Imagine.
In my mind, it's shortcutting all of the annoying tricks that authors do to get around going, oh, I'm going to trick the audience into thinking that they don't have that we're not having an info dump here.
Yes.
And they're like, oh, we're going to have these two characters explain it to each other. Oh, this person's going to sit down and fucking read a long essay as you get like in 1984. It's sort of like, and then he opened the book and he started reading and it's sort of like, info dump. And you're like, oh, come on.
Yeah, but also, this comes also because, you know, the narrator person is not just human, because he has this analytics
He's a synthesist
brain.
Yeah,
this is kind of like his way to give us,
well, his job is
this
to
is
communicate
his job.
Yeah, his job is to communicate between like sort of autistic and psycho, all these people who've got these like super accelerated brains, to explain that to human baseline human beings. He's like the person who goes, right, imagine, like, the, in a way, the character's job in the book is to info dump for the people back home on Earth who can't do it.
And for us.
So it works. But what I'm saying is that, like, because he's allowing just a character voice and the author's voice to come through and say that stuff, it's okay for him to tell jokes within the info dumping.
Yeah.
Like, it's really difficult. I mean, there are other authors who do this. In a way, one of the authors who does it really great is Douglas Adams with The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah.
Because he actually just goes, right, and now we're going to read from the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah.
And there's other parts where it's like, oh, you wouldn't imagine that this would happen, but actually it's this, and let me tell you a bit of the story. And it's like a small comedy, science fiction, stand-up comedy routine just done on the page. And I mean, that's not all that Peter Watts is doing, but there's, like I say, there's a lightness even to his info dumping. He just goes, right, guys, I'm gonna talk science now, or I'm gonna do this info dump, and it's gonna be really good fun.
Yes,
you know? And
that is true.
Even though the subject is about how humans are probably gonna be wiped off the face of the earth, or whatever, you know, whatever the thing is gonna be. Like,
there was actually one point in the book that I found so good when I read it in the German version in the paper book, where you can't really mark things, you can't really.
You can put in bookmarks.
Yeah, but you can't search
for example,
things.
I just wanted to find a chapter which it started with, imagine you're a machine, or imagine you're Amanda Bates, and I could just type it into the ebook.
I couldn't do that in my paper book. So what I did then, I went to the ebook, which I still had, and then just searched for this passage and marked it, because I thought this was one of those info dumps, but in this very fun way. And it describes a lot about the character who tells the story.
Do you want me to read out?
I was thinking I gave it a try.
Oh, okay. If you want to do
some words, of course, I don't know.
Okay, well, let me do it then, because it's not really fair for you to be reading stuff out like that in there.
Okay.
If it was going to be in German, you read it out. So let's keep this together here. So it goes, the book of Eugenesis. I don't really know what that means.
You don't know it either.
Did you look it up?
Eugenesis.
Eugenesis.
It's the genesis of the egg.
Genesis of the egg. Oh, yeah, the egg genesis. In the beginning were the gametes. And though there was sex, lo, there was no gender, and life was in balance. And God said, let there be sperm, and some seeds did shrivel in size and grow cheap to make, and they did flood the market. And God said, let there be eggs, and other seeds were afflicted by the plague of sperm. And yea, few of them bore fruit, for sperm brought no food for the zygote, and only the largest eggs could make up for the shortfall. And these grew yet larger in the fullness of time. And God put the eggs into a womb and said, wait here, for thy bulk has made thee unwieldy, and sperm must seek thee out in thy chambers. Henceforth thou shalt be fertilized internally. And it was so. And God said to the gametes, the fruit of thy fusion may abide in any place and take any shape. It may breathe air or water or the sulphurous muck of hydrothermal vents. But do not forget my one commandment unto you, which has not changed from the beginning of time. Spread thy genes. And thus did sperm and egg go into the world. And sperm said, I am cheap and plentiful, and if I sowed abundantly, I will surely fulfill God's plan. I shall forever seek out new mates and then abandon them when they are with child, for there are many wombs and little time. But egg said, lo, the burden of procreation weighs heavily upon me. I must carry flesh that is but half mine, gestate it and feed it even when it leaves my chamber. For by now, many of eggs... her bodies were warm of blood, and furry besides. I can have but few children. I must devote myself to those, and protect them at every turn. And I will make sperm help me, for he got me into this. And though he doth struggle at my side, I shall not let him stray, nor lie with my competitors. And sperm liked this not. And God smiled, for its commandment had put sperm and egg at war with each other, even unto the day they made themselves obsolete. And this is Siri talking to his girlfriend about it. He says, and I bought her flowers one dusky Tuesday evening, and when the light was perfect, I pointed out the irony of that romantic old tradition, the severed genitalia of another species offered as pre-copulatory bribe. And then I recited my story just as we were about to fuck. To this day, I still don't know what went wrong. So, yeah, there is a... that is, like, one of these things where it is... it's, like, a fun idea, saying, oh, this is the, what it's like to be... and but this is how this kind of, like... it was a guy where he had epilepsy, and they cut one part of his brain out and replaced it with other bits and pieces, so he was half a person and not
half
really...
half a machine.
Half, well, it was...
not really,
you know,
machine.
Not really machine, but different modules in the brain and stuff. So he doesn't... and he can't communicate with people. He doesn't understand other people are also humans.
Yeah, and also
and
he, like,
had to learn empathy.
He had to analyse everything that... humans do, and like put it in his brain to remember, okay, when people do this, then they are like that, and then they want me to do this.
And the idea that he thinks about sex in this way, this is his conception of conception. This is his
concept.
Well, this is the way he conceives. No, not what I'm saying. Perceives sex. Whatever. This is a perception of sex. Conceives is a weird double meaning, probably the wrong way to say. It's just one thing. Like, if it was just that story, you'd be like, oh, that's a funny story. But it really drives home his character that, like, he says, oh, it's weird that we buy flowers, that we, you know, chop off the sex organs of flowers and offer them to make sure, to see if we can get sex with someone else. And then tells that story that I just read out. It's like, it's a perfect character moment. And
it is.
And there's other stories about other characters. And they say, oh, this is Amanda Bates and here's her story. And you read it and you go, oh, shit, right, we're in with, oh, right, I understand why she is along on this space mission and things like that.
But also, I think... into the story also counts that the way in when we're 2054 or whenever
I don't even know what you're saying.
Whatever
the
in
date
the, in the future,
it's 2080.
People just don't have like body sex anymore, like body to body.
Yeah,
like, they have sex via 2082.
Yeah.
So anyway, but they have like a substitute skin or whatever.
Yeah. Well, it's not in meat space anymore. It's all in cyberspace.
So you kind of basically have a relationship with somebody, but then you make a skin that, or like a thing that looks like that person to have sex with that thing instead of the person.
Yeah. It's just sort of like, oh, we go into Second Life and get jiggy with robots and stuff like that.
And I really, really, very much appreciate all the ideas in this book. All of them.
Is there a big but coming now?
Many, 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 many ideas. But...
uh-oh.
It's just... just reduce it. Like, just don't put all the ideas in it. Like, I mean...
Yeah, I understand.
There's a second book coming. Just keep some of the ideas maybe for that book. I mean, I haven't read it yet, but...
Yeah.
But some of the ideas were just like, and there was this, and this, and this, and also there, this.
Yeah, I do understand. There is quite a lot going on in this book where you just go, if it was streamlined a bit, it does, I understand that it can be, a criticism of this book is that there is parts of the middle of the book where the plot really isn't going forward very much.
Yes.
But there's still lots of ideas being talked about.
Right.
And in the end, not all of those ideas are paid off. And but also they didn't, you know, they could have been building character. But in the end, yeah, it is a book with lots of clever ideas. I really enjoy the story. I think the story is really good fun.
Yes. I also really enjoyed the aliens. I'm basically often a fan of the of special aliens that come along. And certainly there. I'm not quite sure how many levels of this has, like, what in total, how many aliens are there?
Okay, well, let's bring this... I don't want to go too much into this, because now we're getting into story issues, and I don't want to do spoilers about the overall... I'm just saying, I think we're getting a good level of what the book is, that it's enjoyable, lots of ideas. I want to give this a rating, recommend it to people, and then we can go full spoiler territory and say people,
right.
If people want to skip over this, I think people should go away and read it, come back, listen to this, or listen to my other podcast if they just want sort of like other discussion about it. But I really want to get into some nitty-gritty of stuff that happens later on without worrying about spoilers. Should we do this?
We do this.
I know this is weird to say that I'm going to give this. I gave this 4 stars last time I reviewed it. I enjoyed it more this time. I'm going to give this 4.5 stars because I think it's really good fun. However, you said that you're still not sure how much you enjoyed it or not until you're going to talk to me about it like that.
True. This is why I would feel uncomfortable now giving it a rating because I still haven't figured out.
Yeah, you only finished it a few days ago.
Yes.
You're still thinking about it.
Yeah.
Well,
so I would like to give my rating at the end of this podcast.
Okay, but generally you think mostly positive. You think you're not going to tell anyone don't bother reading this.
No, it's not 2 and below. Certainly not, or 3 and below.
Mm.
It's more 3 and up. But I haven't quite decided.
But you're thinking, is this going to be a 3-star book or a 4.5-star book, like for me or something like that? You're still not sure. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's it. So let's set off the Hoilerspawn. Hoilerspawn. The spoiler horn. Yeah, I don't know what it...
That sounds like a Hoilerspawn.
Let's do Hoilerspawns. Okay. Right then. Let's do it. So, again, if people are now listening to spoilers, lots of people won't have listened or read the book. So the idea is that there's an alien signal in the Oort cloud or the Kuiper belt or something, and they're like, okay, let's send some people along there, and they build a spaceship which doesn't get fuel from the sun, but it gets this imprinted quantum signatures of antimatter from the sun and gets tunnels through
the
Icarus Project, which is like in the outside of the sun or something. So it's getting this stream which doesn't create fuel, but you can reprogram matter with the information which is being channeled over this distance or whatever it is, which I think is really one of those really clever things that it kind of gets around. Well, where do you get all the power from? Well, you're getting power from the sun, but it's not really power, you're actually getting antimatter. Well, where do you get the antimatter from? Well, it's actually antimatter from the sun, but you can't send it across because that breaks, so let's just send, we're sending the quantum, anyway, blah blah techno jargon. I enjoyed it that they have a big reserve of antimatter that they can fuse together to power the spaceship, which comes partly from the sun, but actually the fuel. I just like the different layers of that. Anyway, so they go out towards this Oort cloud, and then they're like, oh shit, it's not actually there. We got to go to this other place over. No, they go out to the Kuiper belt, and they're like, actually not there. Turn around, go in this other direction, and they end up in a dwarf star. No, not what do they call it? A black dwarf? No, dark. Anyway, a massive summit, 10 times as...
The Big Ben thing.
Yeah, Big Ben is 10 times the size of Jupiter, so it's not big enough to become a star that we can see from Earth, but it's much bigger than Jupiter, so it's absolutely massive. And they get there, and they discover a spaceship which calls itself Rorschach, which is an interesting name, and there's a bit of a conversation, like, why is it calling itself Rorschach?
Wait a second. Before that happened, there was this Firefall... Where there was this, I didn't quite get this. Like, it was stars coming down.
Yes,
yeah,
so everywhere around the world. Everywhere
in
the world, every single moment, every single place in the world, somewhere above them, a thing fell towards Earth and burnt up in the atmosphere, and it was just a big thing. That's what they call the Firefall. Yeah,
yeah.
Something just took our photo.
Yes,
it was a camera flash.
Okay, yeah, it was a camera flash, and they just lit up all the Earth to take a photo of how it is.
And they're like, where did that signal go? And they trace the signal back in one way, and then they're like, oh no, not over there, and then
it's
the other way.
From,
so that's the thing. They knew that there was something out there because the Earth had been suddenly shocked into, oh shit, something just,
something,
I like the idea,
is out there.
Something just took our photo. There was a big camera flash went off all the way around the world, and everyone had their image, the world had its image taken to kind of check it. It's like, well, who's checking us out? So they go out and they find, like I say, they get to Big Ben, which is the what they call this big 10 times Jupiter-sized planet. And they find all this stuff flying around there. And they find one thing very interesting, which is Rorschach, which is a spaceship, which is like this big crown of thorns.
Yeah, but like, I was never sure. Like, the way that it was described didn't feel like it was a spaceship. To me, it felt like a living creature.
Well, again, this is what they're talking about. Like, this is what the discussion was on the spaceship. And I'm glad that you brought this up. Because the discussion is, when we went into that, were we cutting through into a corridor of a spaceship, and those small things that we found inside of it, were they the alien beings themselves? You know, what was there? There was Stretch and Clench or whatever.
Scramblers.
The Scramblers, that's what they're called. But they name some of them that they caught later on. The Stretch and Clench or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Reach and Clench, I can't remember. And then there was... So are they alien beings in a corridor, or did we cut through the artery or vein of an alien, so that all of Rorschach itself was an alien?
Yeah.
And what we're finding in there are like the white blood cells, which kind of glom onto things and attack them, you know, like in our own bodies.
Yeah,
we have
like
things,
immune system.
Yeah, were
cells.
Those things agents of the immune system of the thing, is the old thing. So what do you think? Is Rorschach the alien itself, or and the beings inside Rorschach... what do you think?
Well, so I wasn't sure. Of course, this whole book is about blinding you. I mean, it has it in the title, right? So you're going in and read something, and then you think you know, and then suddenly
I want to go back and read that same thing again in a second.
And so I personally think the thing is a living structure, but also it is like a spaceship. Living structure. It's like massive big, and it just at some point is finished its development. It's like with the egg thing.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, it's not a mistake that that's all in there.
Right. So it's like, okay, it was hanging out by this ship, by the star thing. It sucked some whatever off it.
Yeah, and it's getting material out of the planet, to scooping it up and building itself.
We were never sure. I mean, they had contact with it.
Yeah.
Some sort of contact.
Yeah.
But you never really know. Was it the thing? Was it other things living in it that they don't even know about yet?
Yeah, but I think this comes down to the point is that they only have contact with either the scramblers, which are these little things from inside of it, or it itself.
Yes.
However, let me say this, the whole book is about what is consciousness, and is consciousness a benefit or a liability?
Yeah.
And will we one day grow out of being conscious of our own beings as our own people? The scramblers didn't recognize that they existed as a person or as an entity of their own right. And even when they looked at each other, they didn't even see each other as a thing. Like, you know, when they said, name all the things that you see through this window, and they say, oh, you've got to stop that, that's really annoying. Look, you're sitting there pulling your hair off the side of your head. It's really distracting me when I'm trying to talk to you. When they look through the window, like, name everything that you see. I see a glass, I see an apple, I see a staircase, and that's it. And they're like, but there's another one of your species right there. And they said, they don't even see each other. Why don't they even see each other?
And in these kinds of points, it was always like, okay, this is where the biologist comes through. You now then get introduced to, you know, the orangutans and the monkeys and the
the chimpanzees sometimes don't recognize each other in a mirror, even though they're much better at counting.
Yeah, even though they seem to be more intelligent, but then the orangutans do recognize. Oh no, was it?
Yeah, orangutans always recognize themselves in a mirror.
Yes.
But they're less intelligent, and chimpanzees sometimes don't recognize themselves in a mirror,
so,
but they're more intelligent.
Then the question was also not about the consciousness of them, but also what is the intelligence? What makes us intelligent?
No. Let's go back one, because I still haven't finished my point about this. What is the alien and what's the thing?
Oh, okay.
If you don't have a sense of self, what does it mean to say who am I or what am I?
Mm.
Think about that again. if you don't, like, the scramblers didn't have a sense of self, so they didn't even exist to themselves. Like, they didn't even exist. Like, even that happened to Amanda Bates, one of the characters. She got her mind wiped in a way, yeah. And she was like, no, I don't exist anymore. And they're like, you're talking to me. It's like, yeah, but I'm you know, that's it, I'm not here,
I'm dead.
And she's, and then you say, you think you're gonna die. It's like, no, she's not saying she thinks she's gonna die, she just doesn't have a sense of self anymore. And then it comes back, whatever.
Yeah,
but the scramblers don't have a sense of self. But if they don't have a sense of self, they should still be able to recognize what the other, that there is another one of them there. So
right.
If the scrambler, they wouldn't see themselves or don't acknowledge that themselves exist. Why does one scrambler not acknowledge that another scrambler exists?
But
why would that be?
Wasn't that the trap that they were setting for the humans?
No, that was later. That's disconnected. My point being, this again, this comes down to, this is a real thing that I'm trying to get across here. If you don't have a sense of self, what does it mean to ask, what is the alien, or who am I as an alien? Like, you're saying, was all of Rorschach, the entire spaceship, which was 30 kilometers across, was that one being and one entity in itself, in its own right? Or was it made up, or was there lots of entities on it which are individual aliens? If you don't have a discrete sense of self, what does it even mean to ask, am I me? Am I a single being?
But isn't that, like, can you not just imply that to babies?
No, because they grow up to be, they are discrete objects. Because you and I look at a baby and say, that is not me. Because we have a concept, we know consciously that we are individual people. I am not you and you are not me. But if I don't know that I am me, what does it mean for me to look at something else and say, that isn't me? There is no theory of mind for the scramblers to look at other people and say, I am in here and that other person is out there. They have to be thinking, well, they're not even thinking it. It's like they can't even think that. It's like the idea, like, we look at this, like, our... There's even a story, like, they say, there was a laser pointer looking around, and the laser pointer, and it was like, is this room dark? No, everywhere that I look, says the laser pointer, is a really bright red dot. So this entire room is a bright red dot all the time. That is what you're asking about, is Rorschach an alien being, as the whole space of an alien being, or just the things in it? Because you're looking at that and saying, what is the thing that is a thing in its own mind? Like, is it self-aware? Like, is it a thing? But the whole idea of saying, is it one thing? And it's kind of brought up that, like, a beehive, individual bees aren't self-aware. And even if they were self-aware, that isn't really what they are. Like, the beehive is, like, the hive and the society and the building that they do. And they create this thing. They even say, oh, like, this is, you know, they even say in the book, like, the bees make up the beehive and the honeycomb is this perfect thing. And it looks artificial because they're like, where do we get this in nature? They're even saying, there's not many crucifixes, there's not many crosses in nature. But there are other structures which come about naturally.
Yes.
You know, so if the vampires had the honeycomb deficiency rather than the, you know. So there was that thing. But in the end, they say, look, the honeycomb, what the honeycomb is for the bees, the scramblers are for Rorschach, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So it depends what you want to say. What is a bee?
So you're saying, basically, we're coming down to the question, was there first an egg or first the chicken?
No, we're coming down to the idea that humans can only see things as chicken and eggs, and aliens who aren't self-aware don't even understand that there are separate entities which, like, this chicken is over here, and that chicken is over there, and this chicken's over here. They're just thinking, chickens exist. You know, maybe it's not at that level because they're super intelligent, you know.
Yes.
But the idea being, like, if you're a bee looking at another bee, are you thinking, that bee is like me but separate from me? Or should you look at it as is it a hive looking at a bee saying, that's a bit of a bee, or that is a bit of me? But the thing is, beehives also aren't self-aware and don't have consciousness. So even the idea of a beehive looking at itself, examining itself and saying, what am I as an entity, doesn't make sense. It only makes sense from the laser pointer looking at the wall and going, oh, it's red over there. It's red over there. Everywhere I look is really bright and red. And that's what we're doing as humans. It's really difficult for us to conceive of something. So the whole question, it's a really great question that you asked, like, which was the alien? Were they the small scramblers, the white blood cells, little bits of the beehive?
But we don't know. Maybe there was something else that we don't know yet.
No, you're saying that you don't know, but the spaceship itself doesn't know. The spaceship, Rorschach and the scramblers don't even have a conception that they are separate things from each other.
Okay.
And I think that they are. I think the scramblers are part of a larger being of Rorschach.
Because, yeah.
Like, I do think Rorschach was a single entity of a single being. But it's difficult to say that if you also then say, well, what is a beehive? A beehive must be the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, or a wasp nest must be the same thing. Or a termite mound must be the same thing as Rorschach. But again, that doesn't make sense because a termite nest isn't self-aware. It's sort of like, does it need to be? They're pretty successful not being self-aware, you know.
Well.
Anyway.
Well, this is what I'm saying, talking about when I'm saying this is like heavy-handed stuff. And then you have this.
I don't think it's heavy-handed stuff. It's heavy, a topic.
For me, this is quite a heavy thing because this is only like a tiny, tiny, tiny part in this book.
Yeah. Just so you know, something being heavy-handed isn't the same as something being heavy, a heavy topic.
Oh, okay.
Okay, if something's heavy-handed, it would be like people... I mean, it is kind of heavy-handed in some ways where you're like, now we're going to have a discussion of self-awareness, blah, blah, blah. So something can be heavy-handed if it's sort of like it's pounding you in the face with the message.
Yeah.
And this, it does do that a bit, but also... I think if the story is about scientists trying to get to grips with this, them having conversations about what is consciousness isn't heavy-handed. That is just what the story is.
Yeah, of course.
You know.
But there was this bit towards the end where I basically had to just read.
Just keep pushing through it.
Yeah, because there was just like things that I wasn't that interested in, like when all the deep sea biology and stuff came out, and of course I think it is tempting for an author if they are having if they're an expert in something that they want to show that in the book. Look, I'm an expert here. I can tell you lots of things about this.
No,
I want to make the transition between what I just told you about and all the book. Now I can tell you about the same things in my field of expertise.
Yeah, that is part of the book. But the point is, what I think the expert message isn't that Peter Watts was once a marine biologist. I think it's much more to the point that he is someone interested in writing a story about consciousness in a way which is... very direct. Like, literally, it's like, okay, what is consciousness, and what does it mean to not be conscious, and is consciousness the peak of something or not the peak of something?
Yes, and I also think he's trying to see it from everywhere, from
all sides,
possible places, because you have a person that really struggles with human empathy. We have two of them, actually. You have one person that is that has many, 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 many people and perceptions in their head.
Yeah.
And then you have people on Earth. They are also coming into this.
Yeah, like his mother. I think his mother is
in heaven.
Yeah, I think his mother is one of my favorite characters in this book.
She's a bit crazy.
You know, but it's so great when he's sort of like when she goads the father into assaulting her, like putting his hands around the neck and saying, no, I want this. And when he walks in on his father when his father's got his hands around his mother's neck over, you're on his side, like, weirdly enough, like, it was this weird thing. And then he comes in and is sort of like, his father took all expression off his face, but his mother couldn't hide the triumph in her eyes. And I was like, that's pretty good.
But also, like, see, in this whole book, he tries to get to the roots of all different kinds of psychology.
I think this is a very single topic kind of book, and I think all of those things are just reflecting on this single topic.
Yeah, Rorschach.
Is what?
I mean,
yeah. It's like, what do you see? Like,
what do you see?
But even they have a conversation. Like, why did the alien spaceship pick that name for itself? And they're like, well, it kind of makes sense. You could probably learn that Rorschach is a weird name about seeing what you want to see in a thing.
Yeah,
you know, like,
and depending on what you are, you will see what you want to see.
Yes,
kind of.
Which is great. One of my favorite twists in this book.
Yeah.
Which actually, I just noticed it's right here. On, you know, 10% of the way into the book. Imagine you are a machine. I just read this before, you know. You're not designed by this. Imagine that your purpose is not to replicate or even to survive, but to gather information. And it's talking about, it's talking
about...
Is
that Siri?
No, it's not the Siri. It's the ship that they're on. Theseus is the ship that they're on. And it's talking about the captain. And right at the start of the ship, they say, oh, that's the captain. And the captain knows what's best. And it doesn't ask us what we want to think. And it just says, hey, you should do this or do that. And, you know, it's all under control and stuff like that.
It stays in the background.
It stays in the background.
Yeah.
It's wanting to do. And again, massive spoiler here. Even though actually up to this point, we've not actually spoiled that much, have we?
No.
But up until this point, you go, ah, okay. And then right near the end of the book, it's told like, oh, yeah, actually the machine intelligence, the captain, the Theseus, the ship itself, has been running this thing all the time, and they're like, "Oh, we don't. What was when he was like typing when the vampire at the end?
The
so
dead,
actually, yeah, it was taken.
The
it was,
zombie vampire.
It taken over. It was yeah. At that point, it was a dead zombie, undead, like a triple undead vampire.
Yeah.
And it's typing into the thing, and it's sort of like, oh yeah, I always gave orders through. You always thought that the orders were coming from the vampire. Because even though you didn't, you thought the vampire was above you intellectually and you could just follow its rules, you were more likely to follow the rules of something organic than something inorganic, like the artificial intelligence at the heart of Theseus, which you already called the captain. It's right there, like the name of that character, which you hardly ever saw because it was sort of like three layers behind the curtain, is called Captain.
I mean, it is mentioned like all over, that the whole time you get to like, oh, and I'm going through the spine and I'm going into the drum roll.
You're inside the ship all the time. But the idea that all the time when you were thinking, oh, the vampire's thinking this, the vampire, it's all a trick. Like, but it's right there. Like, if you had the blind sight to, like, and because I've read this book twice before, I knew that was the twist that was coming up. I remembered it. Well, I didn't remember it, but it was in this section where it says, imagine that your purpose is not to replicate or even to survive, but to gather information.
Yeah.
And what does the ship do at the end? It doesn't replicate, it doesn't survive, but it does gather information. And it's even saying that, like, that is, the, you know, I coast through the abyss on the colder side of Neptune's orbit, like that. So all of those kind of things, it's one of those weird things that it's just like, oh, right at the start, it's one of those, oh, right at the start of the book, the entire twist is already set out there. And the book is called Blindsight because it's about having stuff arrive in your unconscious brain and you acting on it or you seeing it even though you're not actually thinking about it consciously. And that's what I think, this is a really good book, and it comes back to what I was talking about with Nine Fox Gambit, that I really appreciate a book which is doing to you what is happening to the characters.
Yeah.
And we even find that Siri already intuited what the scramblers would look like by looking at the external geometries of Rorschach. And because it is all one being, and those are just parts of it, it immediately thinks, oh, so if that's what it looks like on the inside, the things inside there would probably be about that. It would have, like, the rotational symmetry with seven limbs. Or is it, oh, no, there's the, oh, no, seven heptapods are from the Arrival movie that I saw before, it's got some similar things in this book. But anyway, it's sort of like the idea of those kind of things, and then he started seeing visions of that. And it was his subconscious mind trying to say, hey, I've already worked it out.
Yes.
I've already worked it out.
And this is quite interesting because I did, like, on one of the congresses I went to, there was this person and said, like, okay, I will show you some stuff. And it was, like, really quick. And he said, like, he had, like, colorful things in his hands and he's just saying numbers and stuff.
Yeah.
And you were meant to act on what he was saying.
Yeah.
And no, on the color you were seeing.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And he was saying a different color when he was pointing a different color and stuff. And then the whole story about this is that you are seeing everything. You're just concentrating on different things.
Yeah.
So you're not always perceiving everything in your conscious mind, but your brain always sees everything that is, like, happening around you.
Yeah.
You just always just focus on something.
Yeah, and then this there, is what... There is that, there's a great test where they actually they could tell if somebody could learn German because they would show people the colour of the text, and you've got to say what the colour the text is, not the colour that the words is, what the words
are written in.
The words are
yes.
written in.
This
so
is
what,
super, super
so
difficult.
What happens is that if you know the language, it's impossible for you to react just to the colour. And I've done this before, and it works for me in English and also in German because I'm looking at it. And it says like gelb, but it's
red.
It's red, and I'm going yeah, not yellow and stuff like this. So there's some really great images. Actually, I'm just going to show. This is just one quick. A quick video from the internet where it actually shows chimps like it sees numbers and then once it sees the numbers let's see if I can I skip forward a bit can I skip forward so it sees the numbers and then it looks at the numbers and then the numbers are covered up. Could you do this? Look, so it sees it doesn't even look. Ah. It sees the numbers, and as soon as they're done, and it remembers where all the numbers are in order, because chimps can count, but it can only do that because it's not actually self-aware. Do you see what's going on here? Like, the speed that it can do this, humans
yes.
aren't clever enough to do that because...
Yeah, because their conscious brain is way too slow for this.
Yes, but because we try to do it consciously, but yeah. a chimpanzee who doesn't try and do it consciously...
The numbers come up
and then they disappear and they're yeah. covered up and then he has to type in the numbers and it's like incredible when you see apes do that. Anyway, so yes, I understand like the idea.
And
so,
this
like,
is what actually happened to you yesterday, wasn't it?
What, me?
When
yesterday.
You were singing a song on stage.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, that was just part of it. Of course, now I'm... a little birdie out the window. Now that I have this and just finished this book, yesterday I was singing a song... And it's a song that I've known for, 5 years? I wrote it 5 years ago or something. And I'd forgot, and I accidentally messed up the fourth line and just repeated the second line. And because I was repeating the second line, turns out it works in the song and it rhymes because it's literally the first line, second line again. And I perfectly got through. And then for the next minute and a half, or for the next, for all the way through the rest of that verse and the chorus and all the way through the next verse and all the way through to the end of the chorus, I wasn't actually thinking about what I was singing on stage. I was just thinking, what is the second line? So while I was singing lyrics out of my mouth subconsciously or with one part of my brain, the intellectual part of my brain was thinking like, what should I have sang before? And I was like, and I was trying out different rhymes and different things in my head while singing a song with other rhymes and other lyrics going on.
Yeah.
And then when I actually stopped thinking about that and I was like, oh, right, back to the song, I immediately then forgot the words because then I was then consciously thinking, what's the next line
yeah.
here?
Yeah.
And it was incredible just to actually then, and then another part of me outside of my brain as I started carrying on the song, I was like, oh, this is really much like, this is just like Blindside. And then for the rest of the song, I wasn't thinking about this. So it was actually only when I consciously thought about what are the lyrics at this point of the song, because I was reminded about what the lyrics should be or that yeah. I was getting mixed up. And then I did it. And it's great to read a book like Blindside, which brings it up. And Blindsight being the idea that if you have a story or if you have something that is only registering subconsciously and there's a block between what's between your subconscious and your conscious, and this actually happens with people who have an optic nerve but there's lesions on the between on their brain or whatever it is like that, so they can actually see stuff subconsciously, it's something is going on down there. And then their brain is tricked into doing something else, but it can't get through to the consciousness. And there's stories yes. of people who, you know, who will get up and, like, you'll throw something to them, and they're blind. They can't see. You'll throw something to them, and they'll reach up with a hand and knock it out of the air in front of you. And they're like, why did you do that? And I was sort of like, oh, I was just scratching my head. You know, they come up with other excuses because their conscious brain can't. And there's loads of good science fiction about this kind of thing.
And
happening.
Also, in this book... You get like all this kind of like, because it is played so much in the future, and then Siri, the guy who tells the story, he is kind of like,
hey Siri,
he's kind of like gathering and also comparing, like he finds examples from the 20th century
yeah. to share it with us yeah.
to understand that we understand
yeah.
the relation of what is going on and what
yeah.
is happening. So he tells all the stories about these different kinds of experiments and the different kinds of psychological
yeah.
dysfunctions
yeah, and there's people with this and there's
yeah.
people with that. Actually
yeah.
one of the one unfortunate ways that a lot of these brain things were studied was in the Second World War, when people were, medical technology was good enough that you could have a bullet go through your head and yeah. they could patch you up and you could survive.
Yeah.
And then they were like, oh, why is this person doing this with this hand and not with that? I was like, no, this yeah. is disconnected. But it was the first time when you could actually get major brain injury or head injury and just not immediately die.
Yes.
They could patch you, put you back together again. Yeah. And then they're like, ah, oh, comparatively,
also,
this person's missing this part of the brain.
Yeah.
And they're
but
like,
also,
this.
The brain, this is also then the point when the appreciation for the brain got more and more, because then it was just not like, oh, okay, this is just some matter in,
yeah,
the,
yeah.
in the head. It's just
well, we always knew what it was, but it was like medical
no,
stuff
no.
was catching
in
up.
In the early, like in
the Middle Ages.
No, not Middle Ages.
Yeah.
Even further, like at the end of the 19th century or
yeah.
something. People were still thinking that the stuff in the head is
yeah.
just, ah, well, it's just something.
It's all interchangeable.
Material.
Yeah. yeah.
But it turns out that the brain is actually quite
intelligent
in itself, because parts of the brain, if some part of the brain isn't working anymore, other parts
yeah.
can take over that part of
yeah,
the
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
Wing.
And that's what this book is about, kind of with Siri.
With
Siri, sort of like,
yeah.
well, I was kind of two people, but now I'm only one person, but my, you know, like my brain is...
Now I was a different person, and now
well,
I'm different.
Well, yeah, I'm different again.
Yeah.
There's a... What was the quote? I'm sure I underlined it here as well. So the idea being that if you're intelligent, like if humans were intelligent enough... If our brain was simple enough for humans to understand it, we wouldn't be intelligent
yeah.
enough to... And that's always that really cool thing. And I've written literally two books about that myself.
Yeah.
If you read Get
On
That Rat Off
hand.
My Face and what was the other one? The Broken Glass.
Yes.
Both of those stories are pretty much talking about that
yeah.
idea of, like, if you can understand it, you can't understand it.
Yes. On the other hand, it is perceived in this book that Rorschach is so much more intelligent.
Yeah.
Oh... How you know, like if I see like an ant,
yes,
I can predict, okay, now if I have it on my hand and I put my finger there, it probably will climb up on my finger and go this way.
Yeah.
So I think I'm more intelligent than an ant, know what the ant is going to do, right? So wouldn't Rorschach and like the whole thing at the end know exactly what the humans were up to?
How would it know that?
Well, it is more intelligent.
Yeah, but who did this? Yeah, but like more intelligent than what? Like the point is that all the way through the story, we think that the scramblers have to be more intelligent than the humans, and then we think, well, Rorschach has got to be more intelligent than the vampire in charge. But actually, it had to be more intelligent than the captain, and we never had the
yeah.
exploration of how intelligent the captain was.
Okay.
So in the end, the captain knew that they had the antimatter on
they
board.
They filled up the antimatter.
They were filling
chambers,
it up like
yeah.
that, and we find out really late on in the book. But that's actually what's going on there.
So, weirdly enough, this whole end bit,
yeah.
the revelation that the captain and the ship was playing a bigger role.
Yeah, it's like tiny bit
and,
at the end of the book.
And then they were filling up the antimatter chambers to use, like, the whole ship as the whole thing as
yeah.
as a bomb kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
That didn't feel so much like as a surprise to me.
Why not?
Again, I don't know.
No, you do know, because Peter Watts was playing on your blind... He's planted all of these seeds all the way through the book, that when you get to that point... This is the great thing about this book, is that when I was reading it for the first time, it got to that bit, and I was like, fuck, I knew! Like, how did I know that, like, this... But this is what authors do. They
yeah.
plant all these things
yeah,
in your brain as you go through,
and then
reprogram your brain
but the thing
bit
is,
by bit.
I feel better... Oh, yeah, I mean, of course, I'm not meant to feel good, but I like it when I actually feel surprised, and I didn't feel surprised.
But you did better
yeah.
than Siri. But I like this, that like even at this point in the book, where like even when what was his name? I keep forgetting the guy's name. Saresti, the vampire.
Yuka
Saresti. And he's like saying, there's not going to be a mutiny. Nobody is going to try and knock me out. Why would anyone try and knock me out?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, but you want, like he's saying to Siri, you were the one who was unhappy with me and you wanted me to be replaced. So you projected onto other people what you wanted them to be.
Yeah.
Like, and it turns out that there was people like that. Yeah. And it was Cruncher and the other people deep within the Gang of Four, you know, those people. It was one of those who was doing it in the end, you know, who because they replaced his drugs and he had the crucifix, stuff like that. So I'm saying that there was something like that, but in the end, it was pretty much the Captain and Cruncher who were these like two entities sort of like out the way.
Yeah,
like
they were mentioned twice or three times.
Yeah, yeah.
In total.
Cruncher came out and like said like three lines, and the Captain was like even fewer lines than that. And only at the end via a dead zombie vampire thing, like all this thing going on there, you know. Yeah. So it's one of those things that actually, no, the thing that was in charge of the book in the end was the subconscious parts in the background of the story, like underneath the like I say, where the layers are in this book, like. But that's what the whole book is. That while the conscious part of the book is having these explorations like, what is consciousness? Oh, let's talk about that. Oh, what's this here? And what's this scientific... Let's have a discussion over here. Like, this is what your conscious brain is doing. Yeah. Meanwhile...
It's destructing.
Meanwhile, your subconscious brain is going, wow, I need to breathe. I need to shit. I need to...
Sleep.
You know, oh, yeah, I need to sleep. I need to protect myself. And I just follow my basic things, you know. Yeah. And that's what Captain and Cruncher and these other like underneath things was going on.
Yeah.
Like the plot and the driving force of the story was actually happening underneath all of those things that you say, oh, he brought up this and brought up that and brought up this. But that's what your brain is doing. Like the book is like there's this conscious level that's going on the top and this unconscious level which is going down. So when you said at the end of the book, oh, I really wasn't surprised when actually the Captain was in charge all the time. It's like, yeah, that's kind of the book did its job. And that's what writing is. That's what good writing is.
Yeah.
Or can be.
Yeah,
when
yeah.
And good movie making can be. There's all this stuff that happens, and at the end of the movie, you're like, and ta-da, and it's like, here's the twist. It's like, well, it wasn't really a twist, was it? Because we said, it's like, that's what foreshadowing is. It's putting all these bits into place that if you suddenly become consciously aware of them, it's sort of like not good enough, like it hasn't done a good enough job.
Yeah.
If you're too consciously aware of it, because then it's too blatant. But if it comes out of left field and it's suddenly a massive, it's not just a twist, it's sort of like someone, just a bomb goes off and you're like, oh shit, what happened there? It's like, oh, I just needed the story to move on forward, so I just set off a bomb at some point and then see what happens after that.
Yeah.
Sounds like a weird example. Literally what happens in the book The Stand by Stephen King. And he's even said that. So I'm like, yeah, I got all the way through and I was like, oh, suddenly I just need to wrap the end of the book up. What should I do? Let's just set off a bomb. Why? Let's just set off a bomb.
It's a good book.
Yeah, it's long. But yeah, it's a good book.
Okay.
But it is, and he's even said, yeah, I set off the bomb. Why? Because I needed to force through to the, I needed to get through to the end of the book and do the end of the book. It's an interesting end to the book, but it's not exactly subtle.
One more question about what happens in the book.
Yes.
The attack from the vampire. I didn't get that.
What do you mean?
There was a, like...
Oh, when Ciri was attacked by...
He was called in by the vampire into the chamber.
Yeah.
And then something happened. They had a conversation and then suddenly
I think they just needed to get Ciri out of the scene for the while.
And then was the question, was the drone attacking or was the vampire attacking? And why was it doing something with
the cats? Well, the drone attacks the... was under control of Amanda Bates, so that was when it came in.
Was it?
Yeah,
It wasn't the one that acted on its own behalf.
No. Oh,
was there one?
No, I'm getting confused now. No. Anyway, the reason why that happened is that they needed to get Ciri out of the picture and to start looking in on himself. You know, and there is a difference between Ciri at the end of the book. He is much more self-reflective. He understands that there's much more going on outside of him. They actually had to teach him to say, "Look, this is what you are. This is your role here."
You can't only just observe.
Yeah, you can't be on the outside. So then later on when they're like, oh shit, these things are outside, he's like, I'll go outside and get this. And they're like, yeah, that is your job.
So
at that
it's
point.
Basically a little bit like Schrodinger's cat. You can't be inside the box and be outside observing at the same time.
If you're only outside the box, you don't know which way it's going to go. You have to interact with the system to observe it in any
way. But then you are, by then deciding to be in the box, you are immediately... not observing anymore, you are actually...
You're acting on it.
You're acting, you're doing something to it,
and then
it changes the outcome.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it doesn't change the outcome.
Well, it certainly...
It makes the outcome observable.
Yeah, and it's... And you don't know if your behavior conflicted on the outcome.
Yeah.
You know,
or like, yeah, complicated it or changed it.
Or changed it in any way.
Yeah, the observer effect. There's no way to observe the behavior of a system without somehow influencing the system.
So they kind of got him involved by then making him then realize.
Yeah, he had to become part of the system to observe this. Like that's the observer. Like I say, the observer problem, whatever it is. Where like if you can't observe a problem without interfering with it in any way, and that's the thing. You know, with atoms, you can either discover the speed of an atom, or you can discover the position of an atom. But you can't measure both at the same time. Unless unless it's not moving anymore, or you know the exact position. It's one of those weird things that it's like you can only know one thing. You can only know half the information.
One thing at a time.
Yeah, either this or that. Unless you disturb it in some way, and you can discover both, but then it's not going in that direction anymore at any speed.
Yeah.
Do you understand? It's sort of like, oh, it was going in that speed in that direction.
But now I intercepted it,
and now it doesn't matter what it was doing before, but if I'm just looking at it, I can either know its position, or I can know its speed, or energy level, or whatever the things is. Again, this is like super, like, probably incorrect. But the point is, the other thing is, what they're saying to Siri is that, look, you can be outside the system and you can only know half of it. To be able to know the full thing, you have to be involved.
Yeah.
Like to understand actually what's going on here, you must interfere with the system. Because it's impossible for you to know all the system without it being in there. So that's why they bring in the quantum stuff and talk about Schrödinger's cat and stuff. You need to be inside the system. And I think it all comes back to consciousness. Like, is your consciousness outside of yourself or is it part of yourself? And there is no way for your conscious brain
There's no way to know that.
Well, I mean, there's
not even a way to think about it.
Okay, you can either know if you're sad or... this is me just coming up with examples off the top of my head. But, like, it's one of those things that you can either be happy or sad consciously. But if you're unconscious about it, you can... I don't know, there's sort of like... There's a freedom that you have from it by not being conscious of how happy you are or not. You're just feeling good about yourself. But then as soon as you start going, why am I feeling happy? Like, suddenly your happiness becomes this abstract thing which isn't really the thing anymore.
Yeah.
You can explain why you're feeling happy, but by explaining all of that kind of
you're
thing...
You're suddenly
sort of
not
like,
really happy.
Well, you are happy, but, like, you're by intellectualizing it. So I'm just saying that, just off the top of my head, that's a way of you can... You have to be separate from the system to observe the system without interfering with it. But actually, the only way to get any information out of it is by interfering with it in some way. And when you're talking about the conscious part of your brain and the subconscious part of the brain interacting, and you're trying to learn what your conscious, like your unconscious stuff, for you to get anything out of it, your conscious brain to get anything out of your subconscious, you actually have to affect your subconscious brain. Do you understand? There has to be like coming in and out. And that's what they're talking about when the person doesn't have the subconscious control over the body. So when he walks, he has to look down and goes, okay, lift right foot up, put it down forward.
Yeah.
Lift next foot. And this is what you've discovered now.
If they don't see it, they fall over.
Yeah, this is what happens when you see people juggling for the first time and you're just learning these different tricks. And I'm like, okay, what are you doing? And you're like, oh, suddenly I can juggle. It's like, yeah, the reason you can suddenly juggle is because you're not thinking, okay, throw with my left hand over here, okay, and then catch with my left hand and the ball is going across
and also,
then I reach up and I throw the right hand and then I catch with the right hand.
This is actually a really good example because I just put out a video of me juggling three balls. Not really great. It's just
a three ball cascade.
But it is working a few minutes. So, and then I was asked, do you practice it? And I said, no, I'm literally not practicing. I don't know. How often did I juggle in this 6 years that we know each other?
Yeah, like very few times.
5 times maybe in total. So, but the way that I learned this in the end to do it is by watching people do it.
And you've kind of subconsciously picked up what people are doing.
Yes, and I kind of just like, in my head, I learn a lot of things by just looking at it. The more I just unconsciously consume it, the more my brain just knows what to
do. What's going on? This is really clear. And this is one of these really funny things that happens. If you're at a juggling show and there's lots of jugglers in the audience and somebody starts doing a trick and they something looks like it goes wrong, all the jugglers will go, oh, and like start clapping, oh, good attempt at that. The juggler is still juggling, and the juggler keeps juggling a little bit, and then they drop. And all the non-jugglers look at all the jugglers who are just like, how did you know you were meant to go, oh, and they were going to drop at that point? And it's because the juggler subconsciously, all the jugglers just looking at somebody make a mistake, already know 5 seconds time that person is going to, yeah. All everything, they're not going to, like, I mean, the obvious thing is if you throw something high in the air, yeah. A juggler know, and you throw two things in the air, a juggler can look at a juggler and say, yeah, they'll be able to catch both of those things. Yeah. And a non-juggler probably won't have full understanding of, like, oh, they'll be able to catch either that one, or none of them, or yeah. If they get for that one, then they'd have to, or they'd have to run over there, catch that one, and then reach back over here and
yeah,
do it.
Yeah, but these are like, this that's is just, like, your empathetic kind yeah. of like, you...
But the point is, non-jugglers could see that with maybe in sports, there's a reason why there's 22 people on the pitch and one ball, is because then they can go, oh, the ball goes that way. Is it going to go between those posts? Is it going to go in the hole? Is that person going to hit it? You know, is that person, they with baseball, they've just hit it.
Yeah.
Is that other person going to catch it? And there's this tension. Are they going to catch it? Are they not going to catch it? Are they going to catch it? Not going to catch it. And there's always that tension there, which is really great. That's what makes sports great. But when you watch juggling, a group, an audience full of jugglers can watch somebody juggle 7 balls or 5 clubs or something really complex and understand as soon as something goes wrong, they intuitively, subconsciously know there's no coming back from that. They just know no coming back from that. So they're already going, oh, and clapping like that, you know.
Even though it's still going.
And non-jugglers seeing the same, and I've had this conversation with non-jugglers going, like, how did everyone know that that person was going to drop? And it's like such a tiny little thing.
Yeah.
And I think what you're saying is that you're picking up the all the tiny things because you're seeing lots of juggling shows and lots of jugglers.
Yeah.
You kind of pick up like a juggler's recognition of another person's juggling pattern when it's going to fail or not.
Yeah.
But you can't do it yourself because most people who are, it's not like, oh yeah, everyone else here has tried that same 5 club trick on stage and failed. No, you don't see, it's nothing like that. And that's what I really love about combat juggling is where you're like, it's two people battling and they're trying to destroy each other's patterns. When somebody does the crazy save, all the jugglers are like, holy shit, that's crazy, that's amazing. Because they know that if they were in that situation, they wouldn't have managed to carry on juggling there. And that the juggler pulled it out and went against expectations. It feels like magic, you know, when someone yeah. does a crazy save when yeah. doing combat juggling. With, you know, they reach out and suddenly just grab a club behind them or something bounces off their head and flies away and they just reach out and do this blindsight snatch over to one side and they catch the club and they go back into it. All the jugglers go crazy because, again, they know subconsciously that yeah. like their subconscious brain was going, oh, this is over, they're not yeah. caught.
I also think you yeah. can't really play that consciously.
No. Yeah, I think...
I mean, you have to totally rely on your reflex.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's no way that your conscious brain is quick enough to say, yeah. oh, this goes there, and then I can do this.
Yeah.
It's just way too slow.
And that's what Jochen says. He says when he plays combat, he doesn't think about playing combat.
No,
he just,
you can't.
He just plays combat, and he's just, you know, he's amazing at it, but it's one of those things that you just go, you just play. And we're talking about a juggling sport where last person juggling wins, and there's not really very many other rules, except that, you know, you can knock clubs out of other people's hands. It's really good fun, but it does... We talked about that when we were talking about player of games as well. We went deep into that kind of thing. But the idea being that all this stuff happens with sports people. It's like when people talk about getting into the flow, getting into the zone. You've yeah. heard that about getting
then,
into the flow space or zone
and now,
space.
Now going into my line of passion, this also totally relates to singing because what happens when I'm on stage and I start thinking about my technique.
Keep talking.
The way that I'm, like, what I'm singing, is that the way I learned it? Is that the way it should sound? Is that the way it people want it to sound? As soon as I start thinking about that, the singing is just not working.
Yeah.
The best way that I am in singing is if I just don't think about all of that, what I learned about and how to do yeah. it. But the only way that I can do it really well is if I just rely on what I learned and what my body is able to do in that situation. And I just don't think about it at all. I think
yeah.
more about, okay, what, like, the lyrics are, like,
yeah.
you know, what I want to transport or
yeah.
whatever. And this is the same thing.
Yeah.
The conscious is sometimes so often in the way.
Yeah.
It's kind of, yeah, it's kind of blinding you from what your unconscious.
I think now we've gone through this point enough, actually talking about what unconscious brain's taking over. So this is the key thing in the book. If our best performances on stage and our best juggling and our best singing and all that kind of stuff, if that all comes, our best stuff that comes from our subconscious part, which is training and it absorbs all this stuff, and it's even absorbed it subconsciously, like, you know, the reason that you can suddenly go, oh, I'm better at juggling now, it's not because you've been consciously studying juggling, it's more that you've been, like, subconsciously absorbing it by osmosis into your subconscious and stuff.
Yeah.
Is it better to be intelligent or not intelligent? I know this sounds bad when it comes to juggling with Anthony Gatto, is that he's almost an idiot savant. This is the best juggler in the world by far, absolutely amazing. And he was kind of just sort of like idiot savant, like, oh, now on my first attempt I can juggle five balls and then I just break a world record here and just do this here. And it's almost, it's weird that he is one of those kind of people who is just subconsciously amazing at juggling and didn't have to put in a lot of the intellectual struggle and training that others did. And it's kind of good that you can, that he can just turn off his brain and not thinking about juggling and then just be the best in the world at it.
Yeah.
So maybe being subconsciously good at something.
I often wish I would be more like that. I'm way too reflective onto myself. I'm way too, like, my brain is just, my conscious brain is just thinking so much about things. And sometimes I think, oh, life would be, like, I don't know, it would be, if it would be easier, if you would reflect on things less.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm constantly thinking about things. And this is also what makes then me make not be great with in singing in some points.
Yeah.
Because I'm too reflective. I'm looking at people and thinking.
Yeah.
And that is just not good.
Okay.
And then there are singers out there who just give a shit. They just sing and they don't care.
Yeah, and I think this is the key thing. I find it really difficult sometimes to just to be able to be on stage and do like a pop singing, rock singing, just go, yeah. Like, can you just, like, it's really difficult to be on stage and just go, woo, yeah, and like along to your own music, like a song that I'm singing, I'm the only person on stage, and I've got to throw out a, yeah, I'm really into this music. I get too self-conscious. I mean, I can do it, but but it's not always an act. Like, I can get so much into my own music, and it's that whole kind of thing about comedians laughing at their own jokes. It's like, do they really find it funny, or are they planning to find it funny, or are they really, you know, there's lots of different things going on, you know, going on with that. Like, there's some really great improvisers on stage, and then you go, oh, they improvise exactly the same thing three shows in a row when I see them, and you're like, oh no, that's all worked out. Whereas other people will improvise stuff, but then sometimes, like, two of the shows will be amazing and one of them will just fall on its ass because it really is improvised, you know.
Yeah,
it's like those,
but that's the thing of improvisation.
Yeah. So yeah, it's like letting yourself go. So yeah, this comes back to one of the questions. Do you think in the book, do you think the vampire in Blindsight is the vampire self-conscious? Does it, or is it just a
is it a puppet?
Is it a philosophical zombie, or what is it? Like, is it just learned responses? Is it going, I have to fit in among humans, I have to pass for human to be... It's like those...
I don't think so. I don't think it does... I mean, if it does, it doesn't do a good job, right? I mean, it is...
But that's the point.
Hiding all the time.
We just watched the slideshow version of that, you know, that same idea.
Yeah, and it's
saying
on,
it has
Peter,
to pass.
Peter Watt's blog, you have a whole area about...
So let's think about this.
The
there's some fish which look exactly like other fish, but are actually carnivores... But they make themselves look as much like the herbivore fish as possible, or whatever the... Well, I guess all fish are kind of carnivores because they're all eating krill or whatever, stuff like that. But there's fish which kind of look very much like their prey.
Yeah.
And there's others... There's, like, snakes which... There's, like, poisonous snakes which have got, like, red bands around them. And then there's the non-poisonous snakes which look exactly like that. They're mimicking the behaviour and the look and everything of the poisonous snakes, but... Is the snake doing that? And there's lots of these different kind of mating strategies. There's this great one where they're going, oh, there's these species of I think it's squids or like cuttlefish, and the males are really big and the females are quite small, and the males are standing outside their den going, great, I've got some females in here and these are mine, I'm going to fight off all you big guys over here.
Yeah.
And then you get these small male cuttlefish which are the same size as female,
just waltz
straight in. They're like, la 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 la, I'm cross dressing today, la la la, you know. And they come in and then they impregnate loads of these female fish, and then they swim out again, they're the right size and you're just like, did they learn that? Is that what they're doing? No, but they're copying it. So if you get something that's really intelligent but not self-conscious and is only acting the way it is because it wants to fit in with humans, it is possible to have the philosophical zombie conversation if the philosophical zombie is a vampire. And the reason it has to be a philosophical zombie is because it's mimicking the behavior to be able to fit in with the humans. I don't think that's the case in this case, because
I don't think so.
Evolutionary speaking, within the book, the vampires split off from humans, like, about the same time as that humans became self-aware and started, you know, creating art and building, you know, all this other stuff was happening later on, but it's around about the same size. It was like, the vampires come from Homo sapiens. They don't come from Homo erectus or whatever non-self-aware being might have been around beforehand.
Yeah.
So I think, yes, they developed an idea that in this book that, yeah, vampires may or may not be self-aware anymore because self-awareness isn't actually helping them anymore. Because they're spending a lot of their time in deep sleep and they don't really need to worry about that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, you put two vampires in a room together and
so that saying the thing with the vampires is that they absorb everything really quickly and like the chimpanzees when they can see the numbers
or the Necker square
they see the square with, you know,
the cube with the
darker bit like in both sides.
Is it in front or is it behind? Yeah.
And the shape of the vase with the two faces.
Yeah.
They see all this at the same time.
They see both at the same time.
So their perception of the things is just different.
Yeah.
And so that for a normal human would maybe seem like conscious and...
Well, the point is... Our human brains isn't seeing two faces or a vase, it's seeing some shapes. But our conscious brain is having to, because the conscious brain is only one thing. It's going, am I saying this or am I saying that? Our subconscious brain is going, there's some black marks and some white marks and some grey shading here. But our conscious brain is going this or that or this and that, and it's kind of distracting all the time.
Yes.
Can the vampire see both at once because it doesn't have that conscious brain going this or that or this or that? Or is it just its conscious brain much stronger and doesn't have to choose between them? You know, there's that kind of thing. Like, is the visual processing more important or not like that? So this is the question that's in the end of the book. He's like, I'm going home to Earth and Earth is being taken over by vampires. But it's going to take me a long time to get there because he's in this little craft not really going very quickly back in the right direction again. And he's like, am I going to be... the last conscious being in the universe when I get back, because conscious beings, or intelligent conscious beings, self-conscious beings, you know. So there's that kind of thing. That's the question. I guess we've got to read Echopraxia to find out.
I will
to be honest,
have a look at it.
I think it's because I read Echopraxia and then immediately read Blindsight again. It kind of wiped my mind, so I don't really remember that much about Echopraxia, except that I enjoyed it and there's different characters.
I mean, now you've
stories.
Read Blindsight three times.
Yeah, well, we'll get onto Echopraxia again.
Yeah, I will start trying it out as an English ebook.
Yes, because I had it as an English ebook already.
And I will see how far I get. I know now that it is available as a German ebook as well.
Anyway,
It costs a bit of money, as always.
That's fine.
You do the advertising.
Audible ad. Yeah, helps support us. audibletrial.com/SFBIP. Blindsight is available as an audiobook. You can get it for free. Test it out. I haven't actually listened to the audiobook. I may in the future. But I'm thinking, because last time I read Echopraxia as an ebook, this time I'm going to listen to it as an audiobook. I'm going to spend a credit on it. Even though I've got it as an ebook, I like reading... Like, if I've read a book before as a paperback or ebook, I like then listening to the audiobook. And vice versa. If I've listened to an audiobook before, I then like kind of diving into it again as an ebook, not as a paperback. I'm over that now.
Yeah, it's a different kind of sense.
Kind of get a different sense of the book and things like that. So even if it's a book that you've read before, check out audio versions of books that you've read before. You get a whole different experience with people, you know, different readings of it. Like, the person reading it has, like, puts different inflections on it. So that's really great. So check out audibletrial.com/SFBIP. By signing up for a free trial, you actually help Juliana pay for her ebooks.
Yay!
And it can work out that way. So, because we don't take, like, oh, the birds have
got lots
loads
of worms in their beak.
The early bird catches the worm, and also all the birds in our garden.
Yeah.
All five birds in our garden now are going to catch
this
worms.
Is crazy.
Do you think worms are self-aware?
No. I mean,
do you think birds are self-aware?
Well, they're aware that when it's wet, they have to go
That's not being self-aware. I think some parrots and some bigger birds are self-aware.
Okay.
They recognize themselves in the mirror.
Is that the thing that points out you have...
Yeah, recognizing yourself in the mirror is pretty much the best test that we have.
Funny because with some monkeys or something, up until a certain point... Humans and the monkey are
exactly the same
kind of level.
And then humans develop that.
Yeah.
It even said, was it in the book or was it in the presentation that we just saw? Like, humans under two are clinically diagnosable as psychopaths.
Yeah.
Or sociopaths or whatever it is. Like,
I mean, of course, they only know that this They don't know about the outside.
Okay, just quickly testing on. We just read a book by a Canadian author talking about consciousness, people being self-aware or not being self-aware, and philosophical zombies. Does this remind you of anything?
Is that the same author?
No, Quantum Night is a different...
Is
a Canadian author writing about philosophical zombies.
Oh, there was one important bit I tell...
Can I finish?
Yeah.
I'm just saying that if you're going to read a book about consciousness, being self-conscious, psychopaths, all that kind of stuff, do you want to read Quantum Night, which is awful, or do you want to read this book, which is awful? But this is like intentionally, like, this is awful in a way which is sort of like there's some awful situations that come up. Because we're talking about psychopaths and philosophical zombies. Yeah. This is just so good. And then you read Robert J. Sawyer's Quantum Night, which is just the worst thing ever. Inventing new forms of prejudice against people which don't exist, but then let's believe they exist. Anyway, it's all terrible. Yeah. Whereas this is a book which is sort of like, instead of casting other people as psychopaths and sociopaths or philosophical zombies, and then the special nerds who read science fiction, we're the real peaks of things.
You feel good about it.
What I like this is that this is set in the future, and we're literally talking about zombies. Vampires. Zombie vampires, and talking about people who've got all these augmentations in the brain. And what I actually really like about this book is that you get all the way through the book and it just goes, oh, I forgot to mention, up until this point when I'm reporting all these conversations between these people, they're not talking the language you think. I'm translating this so you can understand. They're talking super high speed and all this different kind of stuff. And I got to the point and I'm like, kind of makes sense. Like, they wouldn't be having conversations at this level. They'd be exchanging the same information, but thank you very much, Siri, in the book. For helping us get back to that. Yeah.
So there was one important bit that I didn't mention it, and I need to mention it because that was...
We're only an hour and 20 minutes in. It's a good book. I don't mind talking for an hour and a half about books I like.
Yeah, this was the very first thing that I, even in 2014, wrote down as a thing to remember.
Yeah.
The first thing I was thinking when they encountered Rorschach was Solaris.
Mm.
Very, very much. Yeah. It is an entity that influences the human brains with hallucinations. And
create situations for them and test them back again. Yeah.
Exactly. So it is the way to communicate and to find out about the humans is by influencing them on a psychological level.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, there is definitely the thing is like, are we testing it or is this testing us?
Yeah.
Like, which direction is the science experiment going in in this book? Yeah, so there is that kind of stuff going in. But we actually learned from the Peter Watts reading that he is like, oh, I've got this idea for a world which is this whole marine planet, but the whole thing is a single organism and this whole thing is like there. And then he's like, and then I went to the library and got out Solaris and read that and I was like, oh, shit, it's been done before. So even Peter Watts acknowledges that he is existing, like his fiction exists in the same space, or this book exists in the same mind exploration space as Solaris does.
But then this comes down again to mind things again as well. You think you're having a brilliant idea just because your unconscious brain somewhere got some information from some place. And then
it puts it all together.
It puts it all together, mix it up with different things.
Yeah, that's the same thing that happened with me with my novel Minding Tomorrow. And it was when I went back and read that book Emergence. I can't remember the author's name. And I was reading it, I was like,
Wasn't it Bryn?
No, it wasn't Bryn. It was something. Yeah, I can't remember. But as I was reading it, as I started reading that book again, I was like, oh, this is where all that stuff came from. But I'd just forgotten where it came from, and my subconscious brain had compiled it all this thing, and then like spurted it back out into my brain during a dream. Well, it wasn't the same. It wasn't not the same story, because that wasn't a story about time travel and all these other kind of things. It was a different idea, but just sort of like some of the ideas. And then I was like, oh, that word is almost exactly the same, like the augmented reality goggles, like glasses that are in the three things. I think in my book I call them fusers, and he'd put them as viewpers or something like that. It's sort of like, oh, like two letters different in this word. And there's a few other bits and pieces in that book.
Yeah,
so, and that book is called Emergence, about the emergence of a artificial intelligence, and the whole series of Minding Tomorrow and Combat and Get That Rat Off My Face and Broken Glass, all of that series is like, it's leading to a similar, not a similar kind of thing, but there's similar explorations going on there. Even though the stories are completely different, all that kind of stuff, it's sort of like, oh, right, that's really weird.
But your unconscious brain must have...
My unconscious brain is just like, oh, it was... I read this book and all these other books, and I put it all together, and I came to some similar conclusions, which were all in this book, which I then completely forgot about. And I was like, oh yeah, I remember reading this book once. And I was reading it, and I was like, this is very familiar of my own work.
Yeah. But that
happens with everyone. I mean,
yeah, of course.
There isn't a single.
But that was very, very prominent, especially at the beginning when they encounter the entity.
All right, I think we've gone on far enough. Was there one final question? Oh, you were saying how many aliens were there? It wasn't about like when the aliens got trapped them at the end, when they were like, oh, the two aliens have died and they're floating over there, and then there was a third alien, and they're like, there was always a third alien.
The third alien was the one in the freezer. It was always there in my head.
Yeah, but it was always there in the head. But when they said, oh, we shot the thing and there's two aliens floated away, we're meant to think, and the people there thought, oh, those two aliens that floated away were the two we've just killed them now, and now they float away. But those aliens knew that there was another one that they had, and they were like, oh, I'll be dead, and this one can be dead, and then I'll come back. You know.
Yeah.
So that's when you first said, how many aliens were there? And I thought it was kind of obvious how many aliens.
No. Like, I'm talking about
Rorschach the alien, and what are the things inside?
And the scramblers, were they just...
Yeah, I think the only question is...
There's another whole other... Because they only went in there, like, a really, really, like...
Yeah, they went into tiny little bit. Yeah, there will be other things which are scrambler size or scrambler... like different functions, so they have different functions
but there's not like, you know, like I'm
is there a queen bee, is that
like something like that, or like something sitting in a cockpit and steering the thing,
does that even mean? Because this is the thing sitting in the cockpit steering the thing
isn't
what is steering the thing sitting in the cockpit. Okay, so the brain is the thing steering the thing which is in the thing steering the thing which is in Rorschach steering everything that. But then you go, but inside the brain, what is the thing? So you go, okay, there's this subpart of the brain which is the thing steering the brain, telling the brain to steer the body, which is then telling the body to steer the queen, and then the queen is telling the whole thing to steer this.
So basically, every human has like basically two pilots.
No, well. Again, like, you're thinking this is that you're a laser pointer looking out into the world and going, everything is red. Like, thinking that there is something piloting something.
Yeah.
And I think the point with the scramblers is that every nerve that they had was capable of transmitting, receiving, and processing. And we don't have that. We have processing up here and then transmission here. Mm-hmm. And what we think is processing is the front bit of our brain or wherever the brain is going, hey, I'm a thinking normal human being. I have my monkey brain doing intellectual thing, and at the same time our shrew brain is going, I'm thinking about love and emotions and stuff, and then our lizard brain is going, fuck, eat, sleep, shit, fuck, eat, you know, that kind of stuff, and then all the way down to the, but like right at the very point is just sort of like, well, I guess my heart must beat, I guess I'll just keep my heart beat, you know, there's these different layers going back through.
But
what does that mean in an alien where every nerve can do all of those things
together?
Like, they say it time shares, it's not like these nerves are for this and these nerves are for this and these nerves are this. It's like, at this time these nerves are doing this job, and at this time these nerves are doing this job. So in the end it's sort of like, where is the me? It's more kind of like, when is the me? And when I'm not thinking about me, do I exist as a thing, you know? So maybe Rorschach just, it was growing all the time. Maybe it just hadn't grown past the 2-year-old child's point.
Exactly.
Maybe in the future it would get conscious, but we never got to that point.
Are we going to see it again in Ecopraxia?
Ecopraxia, to be again, I don't remember much about Ecopraxia.
Okay, so we'll just read it and then we find out.
I do remember it starts off back on Earth again and follows different characters.
All right.
Like, there's Firefall happens, and this is something that happens over there. Meanwhile, back on Earth is what Ecopraxia is.
Cool.
Meanwhile, back on Earth, oh shit, vampires is kind of what it is.
All right.
And there's stuff in space too.
Okay, so now I'm down, I have to still give my rating.
Oh, you're going to do it? Okay,
well,
after this whole conversation,
is
it gone up? Have I convinced you that there's good stuff going on? Or are you just annoyed that it worked too well on you?
No, no, I think this is why I wanted to do this. And I have the rating afterwards.
Yeah.
Because I knew it would clarify things for me. And I think I will now give it 4 stars.
Mm-hmm.
Because I appreciate things better, but just by talking about it. This is how I work.
Yeah, because the stuff that you weren't sure you appreciated was still in your subconscious mind, unconscious mind, and you had to tell your subconscious mind to go in there and dig around in there a bit. Yeah. And now because your subconscious mind has thought it, now you think it's important. Like, this is the thing when you watch media, sometimes you can just enjoy it. Don't think about it too hard.
Yeah.
Like, you enjoyed that book. Yeah. Don't think about the plot spoilers. Don't know those plot holes. Don't think about the character motivations. Ignore that there was this rape scene when you were 8 years old. You didn't remember. You didn't realize it was a rape scene, and now there's a rape scene. And just don't think about that, and you can still enjoy it at the same level as your pre-conscious self enjoyed it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Don't get too self-conscious about some things. Just let it flow over you and enjoy it. Although this book is actually really fun to think about on a proper conscious. Get in among the weeds level.
I'm really appreciating having these conversations as well because I think they're really
That's why you're my girlfriend and I'm your boyfriend. So
six years now.
I know, just had 6 years. But that's why when we our very first day we met each other and we went on a date and we had a conversation about the book Demon, like that. And we had on our very first date, we did a mini science fiction book review podcast discussion.
That is true.
Over a pizza or whatever it was, or a drink or whatever it was like that. So us talking about stuff like this, it's not really a surprise that this is part of our relationship, and it's not really like a recent thing or a new,
It's certainly not new, but it's fun that it's still... It's still a big
part of our life is to read the same book and then go, I'm not sure if I enjoyed that or not. And me like, no, you did. Or you're like, I'm not sure if I enjoyed that. And I'm like, no, you shouldn't have enjoyed that book.
Yeah. But that's also down to us like enjoying to talk.
Yeah. Good. We've talked enough. An hour and a half. Thanks a lot for listening. I gave it 4.5. You gave it 4 stars.
4 stars.
4.25. Yeah, 4.25 stars. Follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burge. Juliana is at JUKU Berlin, which is Juliana Kunzendorf Berlin. JUKU Berlin.
Oh, I also did recently a podcast with Jesse.
Oh, yeah.
On the SFF Audio.
I don't think it's out yet, though.
It's not out yet.
No, but when it is out, I'll stick it here in the feed. So you don't even need to go look for it. It'll arrive here.
Yes,
so,
it was a fun podcast.
So you're talking about some Man in the Moon.
2 hours long, but...
Yeah. I haven't listened to it yet.
Not the Man in the Moon.
No, what was it?
We talked about Peter's Beagle, A Fine and Private Place.
Okay.
And Edgar Allan Poe, The Raven.
Oh, okay.
And
great.
It's really good and fun.
Okay. Well, I look forward to listening to that, because, again, it's always the thing when you listen to a podcast with your friends on it, it feels like you're just listening on a conversation between friends, and you're like, no, but... Oh. But the good thing is about the SFF Audio is that if they're talking about a book that I've talked about, one of them, or someone on there will often say, oh, Luke liked this, and I'm like, oh, it's like I'm part of the conversation, if not. I should get back on. I've not been on the podcast for a while.
Yeah. It's fine, a book to go on it.
It's the same with Jenny on Reading Envy, you know, because we listen to each other's podcasts, that she'll suddenly go, oh, I got to this book finally because Luke recommended it, and then I'll listen, and then I'll suddenly go, I say, well, I'm reading this book because Jenny talked about it so much over on this podcast, you know, so it's like a conversation through time.
Nice. All right. Yeah. That was
Instagram,
all
Luke Burridge. Yeah. Email me, luke@juggler.net. It's actually funny. I should quickly go back across here because I was looking for an email between me and... Peter Watts about egopraxia back in the day, and I found this thing. Was it via Google Plus? This is how long ago it was. It says there's so much going on. Oh, I just clicked away from it. It says, there's so much going on with these two books. I'd love to hear a spoiler cast of your interpretation of exactly what is going on with this world and who's really in charge. If anything, that's talking about echopraxia and blindsight. So it's really funny that I got this message back in September of 2014, and now we finally got Matt Ubel. If you're still listening, we've done the spoiler cast. I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah.
So that's it. I didn't even realize I was on Google Plus, but I just noticed that in my emails when I was looking back through.
It's all there.
That's it for me.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
And go on Goodreads.
Oh, yeah, Goodreads. And we can see what you like.
You can recommend books. And
Blindsight.
I have actually a lot of people who really, really appreciate and read Blindsight. Like, highly rated. 3.99.
Overall. And with my, it's like 4.08. So this is even among all readers in general, solid 4-star book among SFBRP listeners, which is pretty much who my friends are. You've got to speak into the microphone.
I have like about 16 people who reviewed and rated it.
It's pretty much mostly four stars.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Five. It's not below 3 stars.
Yeah, lots of five, A few fours and a few threes and stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah, same with me as well. So solidly 4-star book. I'm just saying I enjoyed it more this way. Maybe because we recently read Nine Fox Gambit twice, and like the book doing to me what the book is doing
to the characters.
With the characters is really great. So that's it for me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.